It is a little different if we were to come on the day after, but the fact that there was a nice little cushion in between gets us to both calm down
a bit.
We had the Yankees Sunday Night Baseball last night, you mentioned. Yeah. I was at the Met game yesterday, Cadillac Club. Thanks to Jamie as well for setting that up. I took my wife, my daughter, and my buddy Vin. Had a great time, and I was in heaven, BT, because I get to focus on Juan Soto right in front of me. I'm going to give you some tips or some thoughts that I noticed here. Now, you know me. I'm more about Soto at this point than the team. Alonso hit a home run. Great. Lindor hit a home run. Soto also homered. So the first time that those three guys homered in a game together.
Yeah.
That was nice. Fitting, of course, that my guy Soto, when I go there my first game, daughter Sammy's got the Soto jersey. He goes deep. But being in right field right in front of him, I'm watching him and looking at the body language and looking at him interact. Dude, I'm telling you, I've never seen, I've been a ton of games and a ton of games in watching outfielders and watching their mannerisms. I don't recall ever seeing especially a Met player, interact with the fans as often as Soto did in right field yesterday. Smiling, turning back, acknowledging, waving, joking around. There was a lot of that going on early, even before the home run. So if you rewind to go back to last week where you had a little bit of the Soto shuffle against Chicago, and I was saying, all right, I think he's starting to come out of it a little bit. Mm-hmm. The at-bats weren't there then, but then against Colorado, back-to-back games with a home run, having the fun, and maybe the most important thing that I saw from yesterday. You could see they have screens there in the club, you know, because it's hard to see.
Yeah, I haven't been in there in right field, in the Cadillac.
You know what it really is? And next time, I got to hit Jamie up again. It is such a great experience. I don't even know if you could buy them,
okay.
But if you could, it's worth it. It really is. Not for necessarily just watching the game. They have a monitor there, which helps you with that. It's not a great vantage point because you're field level and in right field, so it's a little challenging with that. But the experience is second to none, and it's more for adults. Like, I took Sammy, but, you know, it's not like she's drinking for free or eating.
All that stuff's on the arm, food, the whole deal.
Yeah, it's part of the ticket price that you get. And just the different things. I don't even want to give it away. It's such a cool experience.
Really?
Certain things that they do for you there. It's a cool experience. It's great.
All right.
But I'm watching on the monitor, and Soto hits the home run. And I believe that Lindor went to him to try to get him to go do the pose thing. And he didn't do it. And to me, that's, you know how like they pose afterwards?
He didn't do it?
I'm pretty sure that Lindor was like, hey, you know, you should go. Yeah, and it was like, it wasn't like a big deal, but just like, and they never had Soto on camera. I'm pretty sure, unless I missed it, which is possible. I'm pretty sure that he never went on camera celebrating or doing the pose that the Mets do. And the reason why I think that's the biggest sign is because I talked about this weeks ago. If he doesn't want to do it, let him be himself. Don't force him into what he feels is a corny celebration or whatever. Whether we like it or the players like it, doesn't matter. If Soto doesn't want to partake in it, don't force the issue. So now you have the shuffle. You have him interacting with the fans in right field, which is fun. And maybe that's been ongoing all year. I don't know, but I saw it firsthand yesterday. You have a home run Saturday, a home run Sunday. You have him acknowledging, we talked about this off the air, acknowledging his struggles.
Yep, Friday
saying
night.
Saying that, I know I haven't been there for the team. It will come. And then you have him being himself where he's not forcing a celebration. I think Juan Soto, I think he's here. I think Juan Soto has arrived or is starting to come out of that shell now.
I would hope so. Yeah, well, I mean, it's June.
All right.
It's about time he joined the party.
2 months is better than 2 years or a year.
Well, I hear you.
Took Lindor a couple years.
That is true. It did take him a while to get acclimated here. See, it's interesting. And yeah, what he said Friday, I thought was very interesting and very revealing and very important. It showed an awareness. And I don't have the exact quote, but it was along the lines of, I've got to do more. And I think the Met fan needed to hear that a little bit. And you start playing much better and there are signs this weekend that the bat's going to go in the right direction, like many of us thought that it eventually would. See, what I'm trying to determine, and I don't know the answer to this. I think it's fascinating to apply this to every other aspect of life. Does attitude determine outcome or does the outcome determine your attitude? Now, I would like to think that your attitude determines the outcome more than the other way around because you can control your attitude more than you can determine the outcome. And when you say, the first thing you said, you started all this by saying that he seemed very very interactive, very happy. He was dealing with, you know, having fun with the fans. Now, was he doing that? And you went on Sunday, which was the third game of a pretty good series for him. Was he doing that because the outcome was better and he felt looser and it enabled him to tap into an attitude because he was playing better? Or Did that happen a couple of nights ago when you weren't there, and that change in attitude brought better results?
Right, it could have been happening all year long, for all I know. And I would bet by the way he was interacting, because he did a little bit of it at Yankee Stadium when I was in right field. Me specifically, he did it last year with the bleacher crews, all that stuff. Yes, we know that. But I'm talking about when I went to the game where he returned as a Met and front row right field again. So a good vantage point. And he was interacting with the fans. It was obviously a different type of interaction. So I would bet that that's just part of him. So I don't know if that has anything to do, and I wasn't trying to make that sound like that has anything to do with his results starting to come to fruition here. What I was saying is that it clearly does not look like an unhappy player to me. Some people talk about, oh, Bobby Bonilla, or he's miserable here, he doesn't really want to be a Met. I've seen plenty of players before who you could tell had the game face on, weren't interacting. He was over the top interacting and joking around and having fun. So I did not see a player who did not look happy. Coupled with, we saw the shuffle last week, coupled with his acknowledgement of that he was struggling and that it's only a matter of time before. Like, those are all good signs. And then coupled with the fact that he had back-to-back games with home runs.
Which is ultimately what matters here, because if he had, you know, more back-to-back games with home runs early in the season, then I think the other things that we've talked about wouldn't be as much of a topic, because it's being overshadowed by the performance that everybody expected him to do and earn the money that he's gotten, which I think most of, you know, I don't mean year 13, 14, 15. I mean now. We all expect him to eventually earn. But, you know, now the onus is on Juan Soto because he started so poorly. And you know, we're past the point of not just by his standards. You know, hitting 230-something, you know, you were. Actually, 220-something. Mm-hmm. So not just by, it's not like he was hitting 270. We're like, well, by Juan Soto's standard. No, 226 or 224 is not good really by anybody's standards. Now he's got to keep going. And I don't mean he's got to just go on a complete binge where he hits 9 home runs in the next month or so or 12 home runs. But if he completely falls off and, you know, and very shortly after this past series, there's a quick 1-for-16 or a 2-for-19, whether it's right or wrong, the questions are going to come back. Is he really happy? What's up with Soto? So, you know, listen, and you know, forget about the Yankee stuff. From a Mets person, good to see him get going. Yes. It's about time, but now he's got to keep going.
And specifically starting tonight against the Dodgers, who were a tough opponent. Last series, the Mets took 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers. I think it was 6-for-37, Lindor, Alonso, Soto, 6-for-37 in that series, and they still took 2 out of 3. That is not sustainable. Those three guys, like we saw yesterday, contributing, not that they have to all three hit home runs on every single day, we've yet to see them all click together. Lindor's had his moments been sustained. Obviously, Alonso's had his moments been sustained. Soto's yet to join the party.
True.
I think he's about to join the party now, and if those two can maintain where they're at, maybe not the ridiculous pace that Alonso was at, but get back to now playing at a good level. That's where I think you can see the Mets take off. And by the way, they did leapfrog the Phillies again, getting fat on the Rockies.
That's a little symbolism back in first place. You got to play the Rockies. Like, that's why I don't discredit wins. Did you win or did you lose? I mean, now, if you would have lost 2 out of 3 to the Rockies or, you know, get swept, God forbid, to
even
that wretched team. Well, I was going to say, think about the Yankees. I mean, the Yankees lost the first game, and they were knocked around a little bit. You know, they rallied to win the next two. But, I mean, if they would have lost one of the next two and lost the series, again, it's not a fatal blow, but it's a horrendous look. But you're right about the top three hitters. Like, Lindor was, Pete was amazing from day one, and then he cooled off a little bit. Lindor was pretty awesome from day one as well. Remember, he was hitting 3-3 or 3-10, whatever it was. And, you know, Soto's the guy who's been, you know, languishing here in the middle of them. And you've yet to have even a weak sequence where all three have been humming together. If you start to get that, and I think at some point you have to get it because their numbers tell you that you will. And when and if you get that, well, that elevates the Mets to a higher level, period.
Remember too, last thing about the standings, Phillies were 7-0 against the Rockies so far this year.
Is that what they were?
Yeah. Okay. So the Phillies,
they got fat. That's when they jumped the Mets.
Correct. So if the Phillies were able to take advantage of it, Mets had to return serve, and they did, taking the first three.
You don't hand up. I don't contextualize wins. You don't hand wins back. You got to play them. Win a game.
BT and Sal on the fan. Let's get one in on Soto here before we get back to the Knicks call. Steve in Queens. What's up, Steve?
Hey, what's up, guys? You guys are great. I'm just calling. I went to the Friday night game when they played the Dodgers, right? The 13-inning game. You know, sat through the rain delay and everything. We're leaving, me and my son, around the 6th inning, and he wanted to go down the right field. The ushers were great. Let him go down there. Go down there. This guy comes out with like 1 minute left, walks out to right field, doesn't acknowledge, like, my son was, he's wearing a Soto jersey. He's got a Soto jersey up. Doesn't even look at him. And then, BT, you know this, right? With, like, you're a baseball player. Come on.
Hey, let him go. Take it. Yes, I know this, Steve. Now, what's up, buddy?
What's up? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
so,
go ahead.
You know, like, the outfielders, they converge in center field, right?
Uh-huh.
So the left fielder and the center fielder. No, Sal, I know you played baseball, too. I'm not trying
No, it's all right. What'd you say?
Well, Sal, you're a little sensitive there. Sal played JV, second base, a little short.
No. I know you like that. But no, seriously, no. But, like, so, I played ball, too. But, like, they're, like, the outfielders usually all hang out in center field during a pitching change.
Soto
goes and he sits in the dugout. He sits in the bullpen.
Does he
every
really?
Every time. He did it every time. And my son was only there with two guys, like, two grown men with, you know, gloves, not to make fun of them.
No, but like, you can.
I am, yeah, it's pretty bad. But anyway, my son's 12, you know, he plays travel ball and stuff, you know.
Uh-huh.
But, like, he's, like, yelling his name, but won't even look at him. So it got to a point, too, like, the security guard sitting outside the bullpen, I look at him, I yell to him, because it's the 13th inning, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, right? And we stayed the whole game because of the rain and all that stuff, the Knicks were on at night. And I say to the security guard, I yell to him, like, yo, this guy, how is he? And he gives me the look, the thumbs down look.
Did he really?
No good. I'm not making this up.
Steve, I'm telling you firsthand. You know? So when was this in the season?
Dodger series.
The Friday night Dodger game. Yeah. My son walked on a field, you know, with his team and everything.
We stayed.
And I'm like, listen, I don't want to bash the guy. I want him to be good. Don't get me wrong. But it was just, I was really, like, my son took his jersey off. And even, like every time he went out, he put his shirt. Yeah, but he's 12 years old.
I get it, you know, Steve. I mean? But how many 12-year-olds? Steve, how many? Yeah. And thank you for the call. We appreciate you checking in. How many 12-year-olds do you think are there that want an autograph or a ball from Juan Soto? Like, just because he can't get everybody, you know, a picture with everybody or a ball to everybody, an autograph with everybody, it doesn't mean he's a bad guy. I'm just telling you, like, Steve could have his experience with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, as somebody who's been to thousands of games in my life, it was noticeable how interactive Soto was with the fans. Now, some of it might have been also to some of the guys in the bullpen as well. But in the beginning, BT, first inning, he's turning around quickly. In between pitches, almost to a point where I'm like, dude, focus on the game. Like, I was joking with my buddy Vin, if he misses one of these, I'm going to rip the shreds here. Like, that's how much he was interacting. My point is to make it, not that he's going to give everybody a ball. Like, how many innings is he out there? 8 innings, you only have, you know, how many balls are you going to throw to the crowd? Maybe not all 8.
Mm-hmm.
Can't make everybody happy. Can't acknowledge everybody. But he looked like he was just having fun being a part of the outfield out there, interacting with the crowd. That's all.
Yeah, I can just see you looking like a nutball staring at him.
I was yelling at him.
How's he looking? How's the uniform? Nice and tight. The thighs, everything fits well. Yeah, I mean, come on.
I got some nice shot.
I will say this, though, to the last caller's point, Steve, and thank you for the call. You know, Aaron Judge, and there's been others, but I'll just pick him. Aaron Judge has been pretty much positioned as just a sublime, flawless, even though we all have inherent flaw, but human being. Like, you can't be nicer. You just can't be more approachable. You can't be more real. I can promise you, just given the restraints and the constraints of their job, that there's somewhere along the line, whether it was at Yankee Stadium or down in Tampa during the spring, where a kid walked away feeling slighted by Aaron Judge. Not because Aaron Judge isn't borderline saint, but because you just can't appease everybody. And Steve, that's not to diminish your story. That's your experience, and I believe it. I respect it. It also doesn't mean that that's how he comports himself all the time, because I didn't see that with the Yankees, and I haven't been to a Met game yet this year, so I don't know.
Well, couldn't my perspective be, while I went to the game, I was right there on the fence, front row in the Cadillac Club, fortunate enough to be able to have access to that. I took my 4-year-old little girl to the game who has a Soto jersey, but Soto didn't come say hi to her or give her a ball. Like, obviously, you have to understand the reality of the situation. There's thousands of people.
50,000 people there. Yeah. Just 45, 40, yeah.
Yeah. So
did you get that much? Just checking. Just want to make sure.
Yeah. Do you know why?
Bobblehead what?
No, take a guess. Think for a second to a conversation we talked about last year. A surprising draw from the Mets.
Oh. Was it the Nick jersey, or they did some cool stuff with jerseys of other teams?
You're going to kick yourself when I tell you what it is.
Is it a gnome that Beningo loves? What is it? I can't remember.
Hello Kitty bobblehead.
Oh, God. God almighty.
Remember the Hello Kitty conversation?
Of course, I remember that stupid conversation.
So I walk in yesterday. And
Hello
like,
Kitty.
I walk in yesterday.
Come on.
And the guy's like, oh, do you want the bobblehead? I was like, what? There's a bobblehead giveaway today? Yeah, hit me with it. Let's go. What do we got?
Yeah, we got Lindor. We got Pete. We got Soto. Yeah. Now I got Hello Miss Kitty. Kitty.
Now, Sammy liked it, yeah, which was good.
That's cool.
That's all that mattered.
That's
so,
it. And now, is it a light? What's the? I don't even know any Hello Kitty characters. What's next? It's the Smurfs?
It's a cat that was in a Mets uniform.
Mighty.
And guess what?
What?
Sammy naturally take it out of the box. Okay, yeah, play with it. Daddy doesn't care. She breaks it.
No, she didn't.
Yeah, she did. Not the whole, but like the stand that it's on, that fell off. I could glue it together, no big deal. But what do you think's going to happen? Now, I didn't really care. You know, I'm thinking Daddy could probably throw this on eBay and get a couple hundred bucks.
I heard those things go like hotcakes. Like they're actually.
That's what I'm saying. So against the Rockies, even on a Sunday with the Mets playing well, you'd still think how many. But because of Hello Kitty, I knew something was up. My buddy Vin's like, oh, I'm here early. There are lines around the building.
What?
What? It's the Rockies on a Sunday. We're there an hour and a half before the game. How are the lines to get in? Hello Kitty.
Now, I know that the foreign market drives up the Hello Kitty, or not Hello, Hello yeah. Kitty. That came out yeah. weird. Hello Kitty market. I know that the foreign market yeah. is very involved in that on the secondary market. Like, I've read that. But honestly, the Mets did that right. Like, that's when you do it, when the Rockies are in.
Right.
In case you get, you know, crappy weather and it's the Rockies and just let's just say the Mets didn't get up to a great start. Instead of having 22, 23, 25,000 on a Sunday against the Rockies, I didn't check, but you probably had 35 yeah. to 40, I would imagine, because the attendance has been good this year.
One negative.
Mm.
Game took 2 hours, 13 minutes.
Nothing wrong with that.
Thing of beauty.
Yeah, it's great. 140 in and out.
Start,
let's go.
Thing of beauty. We were there early, enjoyed everything the club has to offer. I was, because of only 2 hour game, I'm like, all right. And I wanted to see Soto's last at bat, which, by the way, he homered in. That was in the eighth, if memory serves correct. And then we wanted to see, we're right there in the right field bullpen. Want to see Diaz come out. Tight game. Okay, whatever. No big deal. I'll stay for it. What's the worst that could happen? Like, I'll hit a little traffic. Okay.
Yeah, Sunday, not too bad, right? You're okay.
Time of game, 2 hours and 13 minutes. Time to get home, under 40 miles. Like, it's like 37 miles or whatever to my house.
I know.
2 hours and 10 minutes.
And how many minutes did it take for Sammy to break the Hello Kitty thing?
Yeah.
Did she break
right.
it in
that
the
was,
car?
That was five.
Was that
no,
in the
that
car?
Was,
that
in the stadium. And then in the car, she was fine at the game, and the car started to get restless. Same thing as my wife. And I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. And meanwhile, I was the calm one for the most part. But it was, it took a half hour to get out of the parking lot. Dude, 2 hours. How can it take me longer to get home than the actual game? The game took 2 hours or whatever, the same time.
What?
2 hours and 13 minutes took me 2 hours and 10 minutes to get home.
I got the answer for you. Pitch clock. You can thank baseball for tightening things up for you.
I know, but dude, that's unacceptable.
That's rough.
It took 45 minutes. With no traffic, it should take 45 minutes. It took 2 hours and 10 minutes.
We don't live too far, as I think people know by now from each other. I've made that drive somewhat from my home to St. John's many times. And it's really not that bad of a drive.
Right.
Like, it's not that bad. It's not that painful. What my experience going to Citi Field is the parking lot.
Yeah.
Now, it's not always easy getting out of the Yankee garages as well. But for whatever, but there's different garages, and if you get it at a certain time, you know where to park. You drop somebody $20. They move the cone. You get to the front.
Yeah,
you can get out right away. Like, there's ways to hustle. If you don't get to the Citi Field parking lot on time, you're sitting there 35, 40 minutes. You're not moving.
Right. It probably took 25 minutes just to get out of the parking lot and then to get out of Roosevelt. I mean, just a complete
Hello
mess.
Hello, Kitty.
Right? I don't think Jalen Brunson had a great series. And if my main reason for picking the Knicks in five to win this series against the Pacers was that Jalen Brunson would not let them lose after what happened a year ago, then he's got to get some criticism here. You've been higher on Brunson than I have as far as comparing him to the all-time greats, saying he's the best Nick you've ever seen. I wasn't willing to go there. He did, however, get them to the Eastern Conference Finals, so to me it's another notch up. But in that Eastern Conference Finals, I don't think Brunson was great. I think he had a great Game 5. I think he had great moments in Game 1. Yeah. I think he wasn't as obviously inconsistent and bad as Karl Anthony Towns was, which is why we didn't really get to it. But Jalen Brunson needs to be better as well. He did not have a great series, and he's the leader of this team. He's their MVP. He allowed them to lose another series to the Indiana Pacers.
I agree that it's not fair. It's just not equitable. Like, what we're saying about Towns and what we're saying about Brunson, you know, maybe there should be a little more connection between the two here rather than just cherry picking and pounding away on Cat. I think now I'm okay with doing that. I stand by what I said. But I think one of the reasons why maybe Brunson escapes some more criticism is he's got equity with the Knicks fan base. And, you know, that's just the way it goes. You build in some equity. You know, to me, even though it started with Tom Thibodeau and Julius Randle, Jalen Brunson was the guy who went from, all right, middling competitive team overachiever to on the precipice of being a top-tier championship type of team. And, oh, yeah, by the way, he left about $50 or $60 million on the table to give the team the freedom to do the other stuff to make sure it's a championship team. We're going to bury the guy now.
Plus, nobody questions his toughness, his heart, all those different things. Whereas with Towns, you know, a lot of people saying he's soft or whatever, things like that. And Brunson, it's not that he's not a great defender because he doesn't have it, you know, in him as far as the desire to. He's undersized. I mean, there's not much you can do about it. So there are reasons why Towns will be front and center, but we should not ignore the fact that Jalen Brunson did not have a great series. And of the two stars, you know, coming into the series, we said clearly the best player in the series was Jalen Brunson. Of the two stars, and I know Siakam won the MVP, but yep. Halliburton outplayed Jalen Brunson more often than not. And even Siakam to that point, yeah, if you were redrafting, like we did this a couple of different times, you'd have to take Siakam over Karl-Anthony Towns. You'd be an idiot.
Oh, God, yeah. It's a different order. There's no question. We were definitely, you know, led or somewhat led by biases and maybe rooting interests, maybe just not see. Although we've seen Siakam now, even going back to the Raptors.
Right.
It's not like he's some new player that we don't know about. But, yeah, I just think that we all thought that I think, listen, we've said a lot of things today that some will agree with and some will not. I think it is... It's fairly universal. There's always a couple of outliers. When I say fairly universal, I'm talking like north of 95% of Knicks fans, devout Knicks fans, the real ones, the ones that matter, the ones who know basketball, that 95% at least look at Karl-Anthony Towns as softer than they want and not less of the answer as we thought. I think that that's a pretty common mainstream sense of where the Knicks fan is. Now, there's varying degrees of what you do with that. I'm saying get rid of him, even though I don't think that you can because there's a trade kicker and there's a lot of things, blah, blah, blah. But, like, if I can move on from him, I would because I don't think he's got the championship medal. And there might be disagreements on that, but I don't know how any Knicks fan is like, oh, yeah, that's our guy. He was money. He wasn't.
If you had a Knicks magic wand and you were allowed to make one offseason move with this group, you would wave that wand.
I would trade him to the Bucks, and I would bring Giannis. But there's no way. Well, you ask. You can't ask me for the one move, and I give it there.
Forget about Giannis.
I give you a specific move.
No, forget about you. It's not realistic that they do that.
Well, the Bucks wouldn't do that. Yeah. Why do they want 4 years of that big money?
But it would be instead of like jettisoning Tibbs for another coach.
Yeah.
Or bringing in something, it would be to get rid of Carl.
I have identified for me, and I'm a little less enthusiastic about Thibodeau than many Knicks fans, although I do respect him. Karl-Anthony Towns is a bigger issue than the coach.
BT and Sal on the fan. Tom is calling from Boston. What's up, Tom?
Well, great show, guys, as usual. BT, you just stole my thunder. I think if they could get, you can tell me how feasible or not feasible it would be, but if they could get Giannis, I think that solves the majority of the problem.
I don't think it's feasible, though. You have to, Tom, look at it this way, Tom. So it's a great name to throw out, and if we wanted to be lazy and do an entire show tomorrow on Giannis, we could. But the reality of it is that the Bucks are trying to save money, and Karl-Anthony Towns brings a lot of money, and there's not enough first-round draft capital to incentivize them to actually make the deal and bite the bullet on the money that they would have to accept with Towns. It's not happening.
No way, huh?
I don't think so, man.
And thanks for the call.
I mean, unless there's just other teams who are completely averse to making a trade for Giannis, and at this point, I don't know why you wouldn't do that. It's like he's 33, 34, and cooked. He's still a superstar. He doesn't shoot that well. We know his flaws. Well, that's the other thing, too. It's like, all right, bring Giannis. It would solve everything. But what would we be saying today if Giannis shot 19% from downtown and 61% for the free throw line, which he's done many times in playoff series?
This is crazy to say. I would rather have Karl-Anthony Towns than Giannis because I think his strengths, meaning shooting the three, fit what the Knicks need more so than Giannis. While I fully acknowledge Giannis is by far the better player, I do not think he's the answer. By the way, how's Giannis done? Since I know he won a championship. Great. Well, where's he been the last couple of years? I mean, if he's such a great player and transformative and taking over the game, the guy can't shoot. It's a shooter's league at this particular point.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I'm not trying to make this about Giannis or minimizing him. I'm just saying that I don't think his skill set is one that's going to get the Knicks over the top at this particular point.
If you brought in Giannis and, like,
somebody could shoot the basketball, a different story.
I know, but again, I'm just looking at his money here. I mean, he's due 57 next year, 62, and then a player option for 68.
So that's similar to Cat, even worse,
it's a lot
right?
more. It's worse. So, I mean, the Bucks would save money if they were to swap Towns for Giannis, but... I don't think enough to justify that kind of a move. I really don't, because you'd have to satisfy them with a boatload of first-round picks or Deuce or, you know, now the value is with Deuce, and that's one of the guys I don't want to give up.
Right.
Because while Deuce has value around the league because he's got 2 years to go at around $4 million per season, that's very inviting to help, you know, all right, let's do the deal. You throw me Deuce, but I want to expand his role, not get rid of Deuce.
Would you trade Mitch?
Yeah, I would trade Mitchell Robinson. Yeah,
I know. I've always been higher on him than you. The reason why I would consider it now, and I heard Boomer and Gio talking about this morning, I think they're spot on, his value is not going to be any higher than it is right now.
Yeah.
And he's healthy, and he's got limitations. Mm-hmm. Now, I love him, but would you rather have, and this is where we get back to having more well-rounded players, right? Would you rather have somebody that is an elite rebounder, an elite rim protector,
mm-hmm.
but cannot score the basketball at all? No offensive game, can't even hit a free throw. Unless you get it to him above the rim, he's not doing anything with it. And even then, you got to cross your fingers. Would you rather have that or somebody who's less of a defender, less of a rebounder, but still solid in those areas,
okay.
but can make a free throw, can maybe... If you feed him the ball down low, maybe he'll be able to do something with it as opposed to turn
create
over.
A little bit, pass.
Well, not even create, just handle it and go up for a layup.
I'd rather have that guy you're describing.
That's what I'm saying, a more well-rounded...
You have to. Yep.
So there are things, and I think Mitch would be a desirable piece right now for other teams. They look at what he's done.
Yep.
You've heard other players be like, God, this guy's a beast.
Halliburton was saying that correct. During one of the timeouts, and Reggie was just... I think waxing poetic about it. Stan Van Gundy, too.
If I'm not mistaken, even in the Detroit series, or I thought that there was maybe it was Celtics series, whatever. But I feel like around the league, the respect from peer to peer is, yeah. Man, Mitch is a beast, which is great. Maybe you could get something back that fits your pieces a little bit
better.
Yeah.
You might be able to do that. And I think that they would be amenable to it. I mean, I don't think they're going to extend him, and his deal's up after next year. Now, I guess the conflict here is, depending upon what you think you could get back, he's only making 12 change next year. So the money has to match up, I think, within 80%. There's some CBA small print that I'm just not feeling like thinking about right now. But it can't be like Giannis for him. That's not going to work out. I would disagree a little bit with Boomer and Gio, like that his value can't be higher. I get their point. But if he's 35 games into the season next year, proving that he's not going to get hurt again during the regular season, and then you trade him midseason as an expiring deal, I think the value could be a tick higher, but I understand what they're saying.
Matt is calling from St. Augustine, Florida. What's up, Matt?
Hey, guys, is the wind bad?
The what?
The wind. The last time I called, it sounded terrible. I'm sorry.
No, you're good now. Hey. You're good.
Okay, very good. Hey, Sal, I do have a bone to pick with you. Uh-huh. However, let me just say this first, okay? And I'm being dead serious. I'm not trying to be funny, okay? I saw Karl-Anthony Towns change his voice, his accent. Now, OutKick was the only company that followed this. I saw it live, and I said, dude, he don't talk like that. He was talking like Rucker Park. Like, he totally changed his voice. Okay, people like that you can't trust. Hillary Clinton, Jasmine Crockett, these people you cannot trust. These people, okay. So that's number one. Number two, my beef, Sal.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe talent is a variable? Excuse me, consistency is a variable in the equation of talent. Because you said the Knicks are more talented than the Pacers. You said that,
right? I believe the Knicks have more talent than the Pacers. Yes.
Okay, but do you believe in consistency is a variable, meaning it's part of the equation of talent? I'm asking you that.
No, I do not. I believe that somebody who's more talented is not necessarily as consistent as a player who's of less talent.
All right, that's easy to say, talking out of both sides of your mouth. I disagree with you.
No, it's not. Hold on a second. Wait, what do you mean? Why is that out of both sides of your mouth? There's talent. And then there's consistency. Yep. You don't need to be talented to be consistent. How's that out of both sides of your mouth?
When you talk sports, Sal, the difference between a AAA talent, okay, baseball, and a major leaguer is not physical talent.
Yes, it is at times. No, Matt, that's not true at all. And forget about AAA. Talk about the big leagues or talk about the NBA. Karl-Anthony Towns has immense talent. He is not a consistent.
No, he doesn't. Yes? No,
he doesn't. He doesn't.
No,
okay.
He doesn't. He can't jump. Yeah. Okay. Right. He's dumb.
So how's he an all-star and how's he an all-NBA team player?
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know because people are running the game don't know the game. Sal, let me just say this. I called your boy Hoffman after game one. I was the first guy on this station. I listen all day, okay? I was the first guy to say he makes dumb fouls. Now everybody is talking about him making dumb fouls. I was the first guy to say Naismith is no joke and fights through screens. Now everybody's talking about
Do you want an award? What do you want us to say to that? Why don't you do some post-game interaction videos then? Maybe tweet them out. Send them to us. We'll post those up. Like, I don't know what you want me to tell you. So, Matt, it's a good job.
You think the Pacers are more talented? You think the Knicks are more talented than the Pacers, yes or no?
Matt, let me say it again, because I don't know. While you know all those things.
You're wrong.
Matt, can you let me finish? Matt, let me finish here. While you know all those things, you were the first on. Shut up, and let me tell you for a second. While you know that Naismith was great, while you know that Karl Anthony Towns was a dumb player, I don't know if you know how to use Q-tips, because I'm going to say it again to you, loud and clear for you to hear it. The Knicks have more talent than the Pacers do. Bye, Matt, and thank you for the call. And it was a little windy there now that you mentioned it. I don't think you understand the difference of talent or better team. Like we've said, I don't know how more to explain it than to say that I thought the Pacers had a better team. Mm-hmm. They played better as a team, but the Knicks had more talent. I don't know why Matt can't decipher the two there.
And he brought in the word consistency, right?
Yes.
So that's how it started. Yeah, talent and consistency. Okay. So what I believe is there's a certain point where if you don't have enough talent, no matter what level of talent you do have in terms of doing it consistently, you're going to come up short. Meaning, if I paint corners but I only throw 83 miles an hour, I'm not making the majors. Like if there's a discernible absence of certain amount of talent with something, then you won't make it. What I do believe is that talent, you can be inconsistent and be wildly talented. I believe that's
right,
for sure.
Right. Well, that's
there's a lot of lazy guys. Yeah. Right. I mean, and not that Marbury was lazy, but he was a guy who, especially with us here with the Knicks, was incredibly talented, but he was inconsistent. And then there's other players who didn't have anything what he had in terms of talent, but were just more emotionally or performance-driven consistent. So I think the best players have talent and respect those talents, and with work ethic and film sessions, that it leads to consistency.
What Matt is not understanding is that he should leave out the word talent and say greatness. Greatness is a byproduct of consistency. Now, if you have talent, sure, that's great. And when we're talking about talent, we're not talking about AAA talent or minor league talent versus big league.
Yeah.
It should be all. I'll give you an example. I loved Rick Reed, the former pitcher for the Mets. I loved him because he was consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Did he have as much talent as Mike Hampton?
No,
he didn't. But he was consistent, and you knew what you were getting. Solid six innings from him. I value consistency because you can rely on it. You know what you're getting. However, that's baseball. In the NBA, I'm forced to value talent because generally that is what wins out. Now, obviously, you'd like to combine talent with consistency. But to me, the Knicks have talent. I'll take my chances with that talent more so than I will the team that has lesser talent but is more consistent. The Pacers are built to be a better team than the Knicks, certainly in year one of this Knicks iteration.
Yeah, listen, I'm going to play on those words as well. Like, to me, the you win in the NBA because of talent, as you said, and I agree with that. I think that's been the model for a while now. But you don't win big with inconsistent talent. And now we bring it back to Karl Anthony Towns. Did anybody know what the hell to expect when you flipped on the game, whether it's the Pistons game, whether it's a Celtics game, or whether it's a game in this series that just ended over the weekend? Like, you never knew which cat was showing up. Is it motivated cat? Is it a foul-played cat? Is it somebody who's not taking threes? Is it somebody who's taking too many threes? Is it somebody who's not committing dumb fouls? Is it somebody who's committing dumb fouls? Is it somebody who's finishing at the rim or flailing away like Mr. Softy? Like, his biggest problem is not talent. I think Karl Anthony Towns has mounds of talent.
Right.
My issue is, I don't know if the ticker is strong enough, and I know that the consistency is not.
We agree. Matt doesn't seem
to. Well, Matt, you know, listen, Matt, he was ahead of the curve with certain things, and maybe Matt can send a resume to the big boss man down the brand manager down the hall, Mr. Hurley, and get himself on the payroll.
Call of the Day with Brendan Tierney and Sal Licata on The Fan.
Today's Call of the Day brought to you by Boost Mobile. Reliable nationwide coverage for $25 monthly. Jeff is calling from Westchester. What's up, Jeff?
I just wanted to say before I get started that Hoff playing his bumper music has got to be the best in the business. I listen every day, and he kills it on the bumper music in and out of the break.
Crushing
so, FYI.
Yeah, they have the call of the day right there.
That.
Yeah, yeah.
Milton is calling from Brooklyn. What's up, Milton?
BT, you are absolutely embarrassing yourself today.
Okay.
Now, I think
yeah,
I
he played well, huh?
That, and I love you.
I got you. I got you.
That you. Listen, it happens.
I got you.
The fact of the matter is, you from the beginning said you didn't like this team, so you're just sticking to your guns. Get over it. The fact is that this team had a successful season. I'm going to give you a perfect example.
Okay.
How many wins do you think the Jets are going to have this year? And I'm going to tell you what BC does.
Jets are going to go 14-3. Justin Fields renaissance.
No, that's not what you're thinking.
Six, seven? Something like that.
Yeah, 6-7. So this is what BT does. They're 6-7. What if the Jets start off 13-0? You know what BT does?
What?
His expectations go through the roof. They better win the Super Bowl or it's over.
Oh, God. We'll worry about the Jets when we get to the Jets season, Milton. Come on. Although we did start the show talking about whether it was a successful season or not. I feel like it was. You feel like it was not. And we've had that fun conversation. Check anything out on the free Odyssey app. Before we finish up on the phones, BT, one more thing on the Carl Anthony Towns. Like, our last caller, Matt, was saying, now, you cannot like Carl Anthony Towns, and you can say that he's not consistent or he's sloppy or he's dumb, player, whatever you want to say. You cannot say that he doesn't have talent, and that's what he said. Like, that is something that is indisputable. Matter of fact, he's not only does he have talent, he's one of the more talented big men that the sport has ever seen.
That's not an inaccurate statement there. When I think of talent, I think of, you know, size and strength ratio and speed, maybe less with big men, but shooting range and touch. I mean, the guy's 80% from the line. He was blessed with great hand-eye coordination in terms of that. So, yeah, somebody like Draymond Green, to me, is not incredibly talented. I mean, relative to his peers.
Right.
Got a gross-looking shot, doesn't have a great handle, but the consistency of his effort, back to that word again, has made him a multi-time champion and a very appealing figure for a fan base and one of the great role players in the last 40, 50 years.
Right. Like, ideally, you want to build a team the way that the Warriors did with somebody like that inside and then have guys that could score outside. So let's just say that the Knicks were to trade. Now, obviously, this is a total fantasy hypothetical. Let's say you could trade Carl Anthony Towns straight up for Draymond Green right now. You would still need, the Knicks still need another scorer in addition to Brunson, which, by the way, could bring us to Bridges, who we didn't really hammer today, but he's another one who's got all the talent in the world to be a tremendous player, a consistent player. We just haven't seen it from Mikal Bridges as well. The Knicks needed, coming off of last offseason into this year, they needed more scoring. I thought they got it with the addition of Carl Anthony Towns and Mikal Bridges. They did get it in the regular season for the most part. When things tightened up in the postseason, they could not rely on Brunson the way that they did in the regular season. They couldn't rely on Towns the way that they did in the regular season. And Bridges and the other pieces, even Ananobi, who did show up in Game 6 but still not good from downtown, they just weren't good enough offensively or consistent enough offensively.
Definitely not consistent enough. I would push back a little bit on the usage of the word good enough or phrase good enough on offense. Like, I just based on the math of it, I can very easily make the case if the Knicks were better just identifying transition defense that, you know, that's like 3-4 minutes of if you actually force them to play some offense and work the ball around and not give it up, you know, 10, 12, 15, 18 points in the open court. I think the Knicks offense would have been good enough. I think it was all compounded by their defensive breakdowns and the inconsistencies of the offense. So that tells me basically there's imperfections on both sides of the ball, which is why I'm worried.
Which is why I use the term maddening to describe them. All right, Manny is calling from Bloomfield. What's up, Manny?
Yeah, what's up, guys? I'm trying to figure out what did y'all expect from Anthony Towns. We didn't get him to get defense. We got him for 24-12. That's what he averaged this entire season. Every game in the Eastern Conference Finals, he got 24-12. You're telling me about Julius Randle, two games in the Western Conference Finals, he scored under 7 points. Don't talk to me about Julius Randle.
We're not.
Devo, who did not.
We're not bringing up. You're bringing up Randle. We're talking about Cat.
DC brought him up earlier.
We didn't mention Randle.
He didn't come up at all today. He's come up in the past. Not today.
DC brought him up earlier.
No, I didn't. But either way, but I really didn't. But go ahead.
BT, you're telling you if I'm Carl Anthony Towns listening to you this morning, telling me I'm not a winner when I got Patrick Ewing, John Starks,
Latrell Sprewell getting standing ovations, won nothing, and I just brought you to an Eastern Conference final in 1 year.
Yep.
1 year. Well, after 25 years.
Okay.
In 1 year. Well, you get some time.
Well,
you don't get anything time.
Well, I will, but here's the thing, Manny. I get paid to give you a reaction today, man. And my reaction today is simply not a favorable. I actually didn't mean to bounce you there. My bad. I enjoy the back and forth. I do. You mentioned Ewing, Starks, and Sprewell. What do they all have in common? Patrick Ewing played with two bum knees and basically played until his odometer broke. All right. John Starks was, you know, schlepping groceries at some nickel and dime store because he couldn't. And he scrapped out a very meaningful NBA career. And Latrell Sprewell was almost in jail for choking his coach to death. But when he got here, he played his ass off. Now, we could talk about, well, Starks wasn't consistent shooting the ball, and Patrick didn't always, you know, measure up in the clutch moments, free throws, whatever, and Olajuwon of the 94 finals, you know, and Sprewell didn't do this. But there was never a doubt about their efforts. Never once did you look at any of those three men. And by the way, most of the other guys standing there with them as well, whether it's Chris Child, whether it's Kurt Thomas, those players are lauded because they busted ass. And I'm sorry, I don't think Karl Anthony Towns does.
Yeah, he didn't. And not only that, if you just look at the numbers, you brought him here to get 21-12. That's great. He didn't do what he was supposed to do in the postseason yet again. I'll give you some numbers. I don't like the numbers, but I'll give you some numbers to back that up.
All right, you usually don't go for the numbers.
No, I don't.
So go ahead.
Regular season, three-point percentage, 42%.
Phenomenal.
This postseason, three-point percentage, 35%.
Not especially for him. That's just unacceptable.
That's what he's supposed to do.
He's actually more supposed to be 37, 38, 39%.
Good God. He got ripped apart last year's postseason. He was 36% three-point shooting last year's postseason.
Yeah.
36. He was 35 this year. Last year, the knock was, oh, man, he was awful from shooting. So what happened then? He got worse this year. Last year, he averaged 1.9 three-pointers in the postseason, 1.4 this year, and in the regular season, too.